provisions within the nest. Though the actions of the squash longhorn cuckoo bees may be disconcerting, their presence may indicate a healthy squash bee population. So, thank you, Don. And Don's photos will be available through this week's Season Watch newsletter. And you can sign up at kaxe.org/phenology.
My new favorite two words, cuckoo bees.
Cuckoo bees, indeed.
I like it.
Yeah, I had no idea. Thank you, Don, for that wonderful augmentation of my education.
Coming up, we'll have local news with the Up North Report. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. People-powered radio in northern Minnesota. You can join us at KAXE.org.
We receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
We'd also like to thank Lady Sippers N.A. Bottle Shop in downtown Deer River, Itasca County's only N.A. bottle shop, offering ready-to-drink options, ingredients for craft cocktails, gifts, and more. Info available at ladysippers.com.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Two people have died in an all-terrain vehicle crash in rural northern Carlton County on Saturday. The Carlton County Sheriff's Office says a 911 caller reported the crash just before 9:20 p.m. on Ditch Bank Forest Road in Progress Township. 48-year-old Lisa Jo Westendorf of Cloquet and 59-year-old Glenn Allen Burdick of Homestead, Iowa were dead at the scene. Deputies learned they were separated from their group. A group member then found them with the side-by-side overturned in water in the ditch. CPR was attempted but was unsuccessful. The sheriff's office is investigating the crash. The mayor of a small Iron Range town was charged with two counts of felony theft last week. The Itasca County Sheriff's Office has spent the last year investigating a claim that Keewatin Mayor Michael Labine has been turning his water valve on and off without paying the associated fees. According to the criminal complaint, the investigation began on the initial report of a former deputy clerk and public utilities clerk. The clerk says the city charges a $100 fee every time the city turns someone's water on or off, plus another $10 per month user fee. Labine is the former city crew supervisor and allegedly knew how to use the key to turn water on and off. The complaint states Labine has a double lot and turned on the second valve in the spring when his family came to stay in a camper and turned it off when they left. He's allegedly done this for more than a decade and would owe almost $2,500 in fees. The clerk told investigators she didn't know why she didn't report the crime sooner. She says she is, quote, being bullied out of being on the city council and admitted to not getting along with Labine. Investigators spoke with multiple city staff who allegedly knew of Labine turning the water valve himself or had done it for him. The complaint says Labine believes the clerk is trying to get back at him and that he only turned the water on this year. Labine says it's not his fault he wasn't getting charged and blamed city staff. He faces two felony theft charges plus a gross misdemeanor for public officer misconduct. A Grand Rapids woman's criminal vehicular homicide case will remain in Itasca County. Cindy Martin allegedly hit and killed 19-year-old Carter Heathcock last summer on Highway 169 in Nashwalk and then left the scene. Judge Heidi Chandler denied Martin's request for a change of venue on Wednesday. Her lawyers had argued that pretrial publicity prevented a fair trial in Itasca County, in part because Martin is a prominent local DFL organizer. Prosecutors proposed measures to ensure a fair trial, including jury questionnaires and a larger-than-normal prospective juror pool. Chandler agreed an unfair trial wasn't likely with those in place. She acknowledged the, quote, inflammatory rhetoric that has been directed at Martin and noted many pro-prosecution attendees at each court appearance. But Chandler wrote news coverage of the case has not been massive and has been primarily factual. Chandler did leave open the opportunity for Martin to renew a change of venue request if new information arises. Martin is also seeking to dismiss the charge or suppress some evidence, with the judge's decision on those issues expected later this fall. Two Northern Minnesota organizations were selected to partner with the University of Minnesota. The university's Empowering Small Minnesota Communities program aims to prepare communities for pursuing government funds to bolster long-term resiliency. Tactical action projects focus on infrastructure needs. The Arrowhead Regional Development Organization is one of seven tactical action projects this year. The project will research the socioeconomic impact of transportation gaps to accessing healthcare in the Arrowhead. The White Earth Land Recovery Project is also part of the Tactical Action Group. It wants to renovate and revitalize the building, equipment, and satellite sites it owns, including community gardens and the Niji Radio Tower. The project also aims to incorporate the social, ecological, and technical needs of the community. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, morning show, and phonology teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
Coming up, we'll have more news from National Public Radio. We're learning about how the Trump administration has called to stiffen penalties for minors accused of crimes in D.C. Does that lower youth crime? National Public Radio speaking with juvenile justice expert Vincent Schiraldi. Stay tuned for that. Also a story on coyotes.
All right. We like coyotes.
Yeah.
Coyotes.
Yeah. Is it which?
I say coyotes, but okay. Coyotes is perfectly acceptable.
Okay. All right. Good to
In
know.
Fact, you can, there is some of somewhat of an argument over how you pronounce it is more based on where you live.
Oh, okay.
But I'm a coyote guy. And
you heard about the coyote
here in town, yeah.
Yeah, that two pups were trapped by the USDA because there was a parent who was trying to protect its pups.
Right.
Nipped a teenager in the back of the leg mm-hmm. near West Elementary. So
yep.
Not far from where we are, but they were using, I don't think it was any, I mean, they trapped him humanely,
I believe. And then they moved them someplace safe, I hope.
We have an update. Actually, our reporter, Megan Buffington, we just heard from, has been reporting on that. You can check it out at KAXE.org.
Support for KAXE comes from the Pines Restaurant in downtown Grand Rapids, hosting a late-night patio party until 1 a.m. immediately following Riverfest, featuring Asian street food, handcrafted cocktails, and more. Restaurant info available at thepinesmn.com.
Let's take a look at what the current conditions are around the region. You might want to wear just a little extra layer in the morning, but we're going to have a lovely day in the low to mid 70s. Looking like 54 degrees now in Brainerd, Hibbing at 47, Bemidji reporting 54. There's some mist in Grand Rapids, 50 degrees, 53 in Park Rapids. Looks like Monoman at 49, Hibbing at 47, and McGregor currently reporting 51 degrees. Overnight tonight, we're expecting partly cloudy, becoming clear with lows 52 to 58. And for tomorrow, Wednesday, slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-70s to low 80s.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm A. Martinez. President Trump and his confirmed nominee for D.C.'s top prosecutor, Jeanine Pirro, have both called for minors as young as 14 to be charged as adults when they're accused of certain crimes in the nation's capital. But some in the juvenile justice field say that approach to youth crime has been tried before. and just does not work. Vincent Schiraldi is among them. He's led corrections agencies in D.C. and New York, and most recently resigned as Secretary of Juvenile Services in Maryland amid criticism of his leadership of the department. Schiraldi spoke with our colleague, Michelle Martin.
Washington, D.C.'s juvenile incarceration rate is about three times the national average. So it's not like D.C. is coddling kids, and it's not like D.C. has an extraordinary amount of crime by juveniles.
What about the rest of the country? Does the rest of the country have a youth crime problem?
From the year 2000 to the year 2020, juvenile arrests declined by 80% in the country. This happened at the same time as there was a 75% decline in the number of kids being locked up. And it were probably synergistic, right? We locked fewer kids up, we put more kids in programs, so we locked fewer kids up again. So there was probably a virtuous cycle there. Some of that also occurred in Washington, D.C. Then we have a pandemic. We have Black Lives Matter protests. Both of those things, criminologists believe, probably resulted in an uptick in crime. A lot of police retired. It was hard to hire cops. But also, schools went away. Mentors went away. All of us got emotional during that period of time. So crime went up amongst everybody. It went up amongst juveniles for a few years. And now we're starting to see a curve back down nationally in juvenile crime and in Washington, D.C.
Do you think there's something about when very young people are involved in crime that it just grabs the public's attention?
The credo of your profession is that if a dog bites a man, that's not news, but if a man bites a dog, that's news. In Baltimore, there was a study done recently by the Sentencing Project. 5% of the arrests in Baltimore are juveniles, but on the Fox affiliate in Baltimore, 53% of their coverage of crime involved juveniles. And so it is more unusual when a young person, and it should be, commits a violent crime. And so it does get more attention. And I think that unless you've personally been the victim of crime, you know a lot of what you know about crime from the media, often evening news or social media that hypes this stuff up, and that makes people afraid. That matters. It really matters how people feel, because the more people that are engaged in the community, the safer that community is going to be. And again, you have the opportunity to create a virtuous cycle. Part of the problem, the thing that worries me about what President Trump is doing, is he's scaring the bejesus out of people in the Washington, D.C. area and anyone who might want to come here.
This notion of trying kids as adults, as I understand it, like in the 90s, there was another renewed push to try kids as adults. How did that work out?
The research on it finds it extremely negative. Several really high-quality studies were done, and the people who are tried as adults get arrested more frequently and for more violent crimes than the similar kids who are retained in a juvenile system.
Why do you think that is?
I mean, the juvenile system's imperfect, but at least we're trying on a juvenile system to rehabilitate kids. Everybody, for example, in my facilities goes to school all the time. You really don't have to go to school when you're in an adult prison. We had programs, after-school programs, basketball leagues, aftercare. A lot of that stuff really doesn't exist for adults. What we do with young people during that period of time really can set them on the trajectory one way or the other. You put them in adult prisons, and you're kind of writing a script for them.
What is a more effective approach to intervening in these negative cycles?
One is most of the violent crime comes at the hands of very few people. And so if you can focus deterrence and services and supports on that 2%, that really can help. But then there are other parts of the system for young people, particularly summer jobs or after school programs. Most youth crime occurs between 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock. That's when kids are off school and their parents aren't home yet. So couldn't we productively occupy kids during that period of time? What is happening nationally? The president cut hundreds of millions of dollars in crime prevention programs just like this for all around the country.
Vincent Schiraldi has headed juvenile services in Washington, D.C. and Maryland and probation and corrections in New York City. He starts as a visiting fellow with the Pinkerton Foundation in September. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Steve, last night before the show started, I went for a jog, and I rounded a corner, and right there in the middle of the street, a couple of coyotes taking a nap.
Wow!
Right there. When they noticed me, they got up, moved to the sidewalk, I walked past them, and went home. Amazing. Those are the coyotes in L.A.
Okay, they're just like hanging out. They weren't worried about you. You weren't too worried about them.
And they were courteous, apparently, because they moved aside.
Very polite. Excuse me, sir, after you. Well, coyotes are in the news, it turns out, and also in the sights of hunters in Michigan. After a long debate, the Michigan Natural Resources Commission says it is committed to extending coyote hunting season all year long.
Yeah, Justin Tomei is with Michigan United Conservation Clubs, a group focused on protecting people's right to hunt fish and trap.
Coyotes exist in all 83 counties in Michigan, so their populations are booming. They are doing extremely well here in Michigan.
Tomei argues year-round hunting can manage population growth and lets farmers protect land and livestock. Naomi Lush-Warren disagrees. She's a scientist for Humane World for Animals, a nonprofit specializing in animal protection.
What we know about coyote ecology is that coyotes are very good at reproducing very, very fast. And the fewer coyotes there are, the faster they reproduce. So really, we've got a lot of evidence to prove that the more you hunt them, you're really not reducing the population.
Hmm. And when you kill one, she says,
you destabilize a pack that relies on each other. And when they're destabilized, they might go for easier prey. And easier prey includes farm animals, pets, etc.
Okay, so that's a counterargument, but data from Michigan's Department of Natural Resources indicates year-round hunting will not significantly affect the state's coyote population either way. Lush-Warren says the reality might be less certain.
Nobody counts coyotes. The only numbers we get are from hunters telling us how many they killed.
I suppose we will find out more about that in days to come, and we'll cover it here on NPR Now.
There you go, 7:16.
That ended rather abruptly with a coyote howl there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even in cities like L.A., there is nature.
Oh, my.
Like coyotes.
Coyotes are remarkably adaptive. They are one of the few animals whose populations have expanded and increased as the result of Western civilization coming to this country. When we arrived, when North American indigenous peoples were here, the coyotes were a small enclave of mid-sized carnivores living in the southwestern deserts. And with the arrival of Europeans, the coyotes have expanded their range from the Arctic Circle to Mexico City and from the West Coast to the East Coast and all areas in between, all areas. There are coyotes that live in Central Park in New York City. There are coyotes living in Chicago. There are coyotes living in San Francisco. There are coyotes anywhere that there are humans, there are coyotes. And they have done very well in adapting. And in spite of the best efforts, I mean, back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, we were poisoning and shooting and hunting from the air and absolutely trying to exterminate the coyote. And the result was they just made more of them. And as hard as we might try, every time you took one out of the population somewhere, a female said, there's room for more, and made more puppies. And so the coyotes have have enjoyed the arrival of Europeans more so than most animals on record. Maybe the mosquitoes are the only other ones who have appreciated the expanding population of blood bearing individuals. I don't know, but coyotes, yeah, they're doing just fine. Thank you very much. And you can persecute them in any way you choose, and the coyotes will simply respond by, making more.
Coming up, we're going to have John's phenology report. Make sure you stay tuned for that. If you are into nature, into learning more, you can get involved in a couple of things going on at the Sac Zim Bog near Meadowlands this Friday from noon to 1:30. 10 years of American kestrel research. It's at the Lois King Education Center. And then on Sunday, On Saturday, it is Nighttime Neighbors, Minnesota Bats, 5:30 to 9 p.m. at the Sac Symbog. You need to pre-register for both of those events.
Two interesting subjects to be studied. I regret that I'm just a little bit further away than I like to drive from the Sac Symbog, but either in both of those would be really interesting. And one of the naturalists at the Sac Symbog has contributed to today's program, and you'll hear about that coming up on the Phenology Show. Support for KEXE comes from the Great Lakes Aquarium, celebrating 25 years of bringing aquatic life and learning to Duluth, Minnesota, with ocean and freshwater-focused exhibits for visitors of all ages. Hours and tickets at glaquarium.org.
Mostly sunny for today, high 72 to 76 with calm west winds. Partly cloudy, becoming clear overnight, lows 52 to 58. And we do have a slight chance of some rain and thunderstorms tomorrow morning and into the afternoon. Highs in the mid-70s to low 80s overnight, upper 40s to low 50s. And Thursday looks mostly sunny, highs 68 to 73. Our question of the week, what were your favorite books to read as a child? I don't know, do you have like half an hour?
Oh my, yeah. Yeah, indeed.
Wow.
Oh gosh, I can still think of some of the titles. I was quite the reader. I was absolutely dove into books in a big way. I had a library card and I used it a lot.
I still cannot get over how amazing it is that you can walk in somewhere, walk out with a stack of books for free.
Yeah.
Like, my mom just instilled that in me, that, like, isn't this... And we were just, like, so grateful. Every Saturday, we'd drive into town to get the groceries, and then we'd go to the library. Library first, and then groceries.
Yeah, well, then you'd have something to do while mom was getting groceries.
And so great. Yeah, there's so many books, like, series that really got me into, then, as an adult, to also enjoy mystery series. I don't read... solely mysteries, but I would do that as a kid too. Nancy Drew, because I mean, you can't beat, she was an amazing sleuth with her chums, you know, Bess and George. It was so like, seemed crazy that George was a girl, you know, and then Ned Nickerson, her boyfriend, and then she drove around in a red convertible. And
oh my.
Her father was a lawyer.
I had no idea. See, I did not read any Nancy Drew mysteries.
Carson Drew, and they lived in a bungalow. And I remember as a kid thinking...
bungalow?
Yeah, I remember thinking, that must be the most amazing thing on the planet, to live in a bungalow. Like, to me, that sounded like a mansion.
Yeah.
And then later, when I lived in Minneapolis and I lived in a bungalow, I was like, this is great, but it's not what I thought Nancy Drew was living in.
Yeah, where's Nancy's room?
So anyway, yeah, sorry, it went off a little bit. That was
Right.
It wasn't the sole thing that I read, but I just remember just...
Oh, you remember very clearly. I read sports books, Spark Plug of the Hornets. Let's see, I read stories about Big Red, the Irish setter. Somewhere along there I got into Mark Twain, and I read Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, and then I read A Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, and then I read Traveling Abroad, and then I read all of his short stories, and oh my goodness, I was lost in Mark Twain. I just loved his use of the language.
Yeah. We would love to hear from you this morning. You can text us your favorite books to read as a child, 218-326-1234. But up next, it is Phenology.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And though we are moving gradually into fall, dragged kicking and screaming, I would say, there is still a lot of good summertime entertainment left. But before we get too far in, I wanted to talk about a couple of things that happened last Tuesday, just sort of after the program of a week ago, I was out at Sugar Lake Lodge and I happened to see a wandering glider. Now, this is a large dragonfly that is quite, I would say, yellowish orange, maybe gold. Tip of the eyeballs to the tip of the abdomen, they are pretty much this gold color. And if you happen to see one flying by, you'll be astonished at this large, darner-sized dragonfly that is quite golden in color and pretty spectacular. I saw one a year ago, and I saw another one this year on the 19th. But what really caught my eye on the 19th and actually didn't catch my eye but was brought to my attention, because I have been watching the green darners, and the green darner dragonfly is a large dragonfly, has a bright green abdomen and the tail. I have seen them with sky blue, I've seen them with purple, I've seen them with gray. They are multicolored and very, very interesting. But last Tuesday, one of the naturalists from Sac Zim, a fellow by the name of Nienhaus, and he lives in Duluth. And on that evening, he and his wife were out, and they observed flying along the shores of Lake Superior a migration of dragonflies. And there were Sympetrums, that are the meadowhawks. There were wandering gliders. There were green darners. There were other darner species, but a lot of dragonflies. In fact, they did a sort of a, you know, off the cuff or on the back of an envelope bit of computations and counted certain little zones. And by their own estimates, and I trust their numbers because this is an experienced naturalist there, 800,000 dragonflies migrated past the viewer in the few hours of the evening of the 19th. And following that huge migration of dragonflies were, as you might expect, some birds that enjoy dragonflies. And they included kestrels, the American kestrels, and peregrine falcons, oddly enough. And both of those birds are known to eat dragonflies. And of course, a darner is a pretty good meal for either one of those birds. Half a dozen dragonflies would probably fill you up. It'd be like a meal of, I don't know, bluegills or something. Be a nice meal for a person. So the green darners are beginning to migrate, and that last Tuesday was perhaps one of the more prolific migrations of darners that have been reported at least this fall. The other thing that I was curious about, and I hope that some of you will text us and let us know that you have witnessed this, but this is the time of year when the nighthawks migrate, and for some reason I and the nighthawks have just not met. And so I have not seen the nighthawk migration, and it usually happens this week, sometime between the 20th and the 25th, 26th of August is usually the time when I spot nighthawks on the move. So if you've seen nighthawks migrating, let us know. I'd like to have, if you have a date, that would be even better. Location would help too, but all that would be very interesting to see and hear. The other exciting note from this past week, and this also took place last Tuesday, the 19th, was the last day that I saw a male hummingbird. Now, if you are seeing hummingbirds, check them out. The males, of course, have that bright red patch, ruby patch on their throat. It can look black if the light is not perfect, but if the light is right, it will shine sort of a ruby red, a beautiful color. But I haven't seen a male hummingbird since last Tuesday, and I have looked very closely at all of the hummingbirds around my feeder, and there are lots of them, but they are all females or juveniles, and the adult males seem to have moved on. Again, if you have adult male hummingbirds in your neighborhood, let me know. I'd love to hear from you and get that information. That would be wonderful to have. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that I had seen the sandhill cranes out in the field near my house with their colt. Well, on Tuesday last week, I saw the sandhill cranes out in the field by my house, and there were two colts. So they had pretty good success. And the trumpeter swans also, I mentioned a week ago that the trumpeter swans had six babies, six cygnets still alive and kicking as of last week. So a pretty good year for both the sandhill cranes and the trumpeter swans around my house. Speaking of young birds, the red-bellied woodpecker juveniles are coming to the feeders. My adult male is bringing two of his offspring to the feeder and showing them how to hack away at the suet. I got a note from Emma Pearson saying that a red-bellied juvenile at her house was in a little standoff with one of the hairy woodpeckers. Apparently, a little argument over who actually got to go to the suet feeder there. So check out your feeders. There's probably a lot of juvenile birds. The rose-breasted grosbeaks, the adult males and females appear to have moved on. All of the rose-breasted grosbeaks that are on my feeder right now are juveniles. And on Saturday or Sunday, one of them hit the window hard. And I came outside, and it was laying there on the ground, kind of blinking and sort of out of it. And I held on to it for a while. It seemed like it was going to be okay. I got it up and put it in a bush, got its feet to grab onto a branch. And it sat there, and I went off and continued working on my projects and came back a little while later, and it flew out of the bush and flew off. And so I was pretty pleased about that. If you have a window crash like that, check the bird out. Sometimes they're just a little stunned. And if you just pick them up and set them on a branch or put them back on the feeder or someplace where they can grab onto something, their concussion will clear and they will recover and fly off with some bit of luck, I guess. So let's see, looking over my list of birds, I think that pretty well covers those guys. The other things that I've been observing, of course, are fall flowers. The asters and goldenrods are definitely in bloom. The goldenrods appear to be mostly, there's a flat-topped goldenrod that is blooming. The gray goldenrod continues to bloom. I believe it is the tall goldenrod, though tall, giant, tall, showy, and Canada goldenrods all look remarkably alike. And the differences are pretty subtle. So let's just go with that group of goldenrods. There's a big, tall group of goldenrods that are in bloom. Among the asters, I have flat-topped asters, northern heart-leafed asters, smooth asters, calico aster, which is a kind of an easy, not easy, but it's more readily identifiable because of a couple of features. First of all, the calico aster, sometimes called the goblet aster, has a white flower. If you look at the flowers, they have usually fewer than 15 rays. So somewhere between 9 and 15 of these little rays that stick out from the center of the flower. And if it has that few rays, it is probably the calico aster, the goblet aster. It's just not common for other white asters to have that few petals. Oftentimes they'll have 30 or 50. So check them out. Check out the asters in your yard. You know, it's kind of not important that you know the differences, but if you're a little bit like me and you kind of like to check them out, good idea to just maybe look and see if it's a white aster. Count the little rays coming out of the center. If it's fewer than 15, it's probably the goblet aster. All right. Boneset blooming. Jerusalem artichokes are just budding. They haven't bloomed yet. The cup plant in my yard, thank you, Dick. The cup plant in my yard is in flower and looking quite nice. As you heard earlier this morning, Blake talking about exploding seeds on the jewelweed or spotted touch-me-not. They are still blooming prolifically at my house, and there are lots of seeds. If you want to entertain a child, take them out to the patch of jewelweed near you. Bright orange flower, kind of a trumpet shape. Check the pods. Check for pods. You're going to see these half-inch to inch-long little pods that might be an eighth to, 3/16, well, an eighth of an inch thick. And if you touch them, they will explode and the seeds will fly in all directions, which is their nature, hence the name Spotted Touch-Me-Not. Check them out. They're very, very cool. The other thing that's going on out there right now that's kind of neat to look at is the black bindweed, which for most of the year is just this viney plant that grows up over everything. Red stems, small leaves, tiny, tiny, tiny white flowers. But this time of year, the leaves of the black bindweed are turning red and they're becoming quite noticeable. I checked out rose hips, and they are beginning to get red. They are not fully red yet, but they are definitely on their way to being red. I've been asked by a number of people whether they are edible. They are edible. They are not very tasty. They're kind of flat and ordinary, full of seeds, full of vitamin C, so there is that payoff. But as far as flavor, not much. I've eaten them, and I didn't want to go back for seconds. They aren't that good. Northern holly berries, the winterberry, is just beginning to show a blush. Of the 100 or so berries on the bush that I look at, one was not green anymore, but beginning to turn orange. So they are just starting to change. The mountain ash, the native, the wild mountain ash called Sorbus decora, the showy mountain ash, is beginning to show ripe fruit, and it'll only be a few days. And those fruit are prized like the hazelnuts, except that in this case, it isn't the squirrels and chipmunks that are getting them, it's the birds. And I've seen ravens. I once watched ravens pick off entire clusters of these berries, 30 or 40 of these berries in one cluster, and watched a raven pick that whole cluster and fly off with it to enjoy it at its leisure somewhere else. So mountain ash berries are getting ripe, but probably won't be around for very long. They're pretty valuable. Red pine cones were littered on my driveway. The squirrels are cutting the ripe red pine cones, Norway pine cones, off of the Norway red pines, and they will stash those into big piles. And those piles are called middens, and by putting them all together in one pile, they sort of keep the moisture in, and then the cone doesn't open up and the seeds don't fall out, so the squirrel can get in there and chew off the bracts and eat the seeds. That's happening right now. I checked the tamaracks. The cones are open, But peeling back the bracts, I see that the seeds are still present inside the tamarack. And on Crooked Lake, there's a pretty good crop of wild rice this year. And it has to do with water levels. When the lake is low like it is right now, the wild rice really proliferates and it begins to look pretty nice in there. So get out. It's getting to be time. I don't know exactly when the wild rice season opens, but get yourself a license and get out there and gather some rice. You won't be disappointed. Among the butterflies I've seen this past week, white admirals, monarchs, morning cloaks, and thank you, Anne, for pointing out the morning cloak. Sulfur butterflies were puddling this last week. Wet spots in the roads, or maybe a spot where a dog or a coyote or a wolf or somebody has urinated, and these sulfurs are picking up chemicals that they can then use to augment their well-being. Bright yellow butterflies, and on one day last week, there were probably four or five patches that held more than 30 butterflies each. Just these splashes of bright yellow along the edges of Blue Heron Drive. So lots of stuff going on out there. It's a good time of year to be aware of your surroundings and maybe start making yourself, keep a few records for fall. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back again next week.
This is National...
You can catch Phenology at our website or through a podcast. It's at kaxc.org. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. We did get a number of texts coming in here, John.
Good.
We heard from Dennis. He lives on Long Lake, just south of Eveleth. He said he and his wife saw about 10 to 15 nighthawks the evening of August 24th. They stuck around a while. It was great to see.
Yeah, it is great to see.
We also heard from Ruth from Grand Rapids. She says, thank you, John, for mentioning the fact that the male hummingbirds have left. I was going to ask if anyone was noticing only females and young. Also, my two fox pups are becoming more independent every day from the mother.
It's that time of year. Speaking of that, I forgot to mention it, but I saw a couple of young raccoons dead along the highway, which is probably the outcome for most young raccoons, and a skunk.
Yeah.
The skunk was not dead, but only because I saw it in time to avoid hitting it. But yeah, lots of young animals are leaving their parents right now. And
I think three raccoons on my drive back from Minneapolis yesterday.
Getting pushed off. Mom's had enough. It's time for you to go and find your own life. See ya.
We heard from Peter from Canyon. He says, Nighthawks, Friday afternoon, August 22nd, driving home from St. Paul, heading north on I-35, multiple flocks of nighthawks from about Sandstone north to Cloquet. Must have seen 100 total.
Wow. Nice. Yeah.
And we also heard from Lily from Bovee. She said, my partner and I sat on the dock last night and we watched probably six or seven nighthawks move across the sky.
Great. All right. Well, it's not too late, apparently. You can still get a chance to catch a nighthawk or two in migration. Bid them safe journey and tell them that you'll be there to see them in the spring.
We heard from Jody from Duluth about the libraries. Our question of the week is, what were your favorite books to read as a child? And Jody says the books she checked out over and over included The Borrowers. I read that series too. And several craft books and camping stuff, nonfiction. McCall's Make and Do, she said it was called. My grandma gifted me a box set of the Little House books. Fast forward to current time, using our library's Libby app, I have found I could get Little House in the Big Woods on audio. Such fun to be read to as I might nap or as a bedtime story. check around to see what your local library might offer. My encouraging recommendation. And the Libby app, if you haven't used it yet, you can get audiobooks for free there, as well as ebooks and all kinds of stuff.
I'm a fan of Libby.
Yeah.
Definitely. My son told me about Libby about 5, maybe 10 years ago, and I've been doing audiobooks ever since.
Isn't it great?
It is nice having somebody read to you.
Yeah.
I remember reading to my children, and of course I was reading mostly Mark Twain because I enjoyed his short stories so much. But yeah, I would sit between the two at the doorway of the two bedrooms, and I would read out loud to them until I fell asleep. And
oh my God.
Which often was well before they fell asleep. But yeah, having somebody read to you is a great pleasure.
We'd love to hear from you. You can text us at 218-326-1234.
Support for KAXE comes from the Children's Discovery Museum in Grand Rapids, offering hands-on learning environment for children to develop skills and grow their imagination. With a new Bear Cave and Ojibwe Constellation exhibit and a kid-sized credit union to learn banking concepts. Hours and weekly programming available at cdmkids.org.
Coming up, we'll have best wishes, wishing our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. Mostly sunny skies for our day, highs 72 to 76, calm west winds and partly cloudy overnight, becoming clear, lows 52 to 58. Tornado Bob coming up in our next hour, as well as the folks from Happy Dancing Turtle, where we're learning about tiny turtles, a special class coming up for 4 and 5 year olds in their campus in Pine River.
Support for KEXE comes from Timberlake Restaurant, offering fresh baked popovers, crafted cocktails, and menu items such as walleye a la Ritz or chicken Kiev. Information about the dinner menu is available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
Our thanks also goes out to Cass Soil and Water Conservation District. They offer Managing Your Woodlands for Wildlife workshop Saturday, September 6th, 9:30 to 11, the Walker Area Community Center. Registration available. Text the word woods to 218-833-2492.
Check out KEXE.org for more phenology or to sign up for the Season Watch newsletter written by our phenology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell. And it is time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. For today, August 26th, my goodness, there are 5 anniversaries?
Good day.
Holy mackerel. Tough day to get a venue, I guess.
Yeah.
Or a good day to get a venue. Happy anniversary to Eric and Corinne Mann, who are celebrating their 18th anniversary in Grand Rapids. Mike and Anita Norden are celebrating their 53rd anniversary in Bemidji. Shane and Trish Emerson, their 9th anniversary in Longville. Ann and Mike Hayes are having an anniversary in Bemidji, and Mary Nitzel and Deidre Hansen are celebrating their anniversary in Chautauqua, Wisconsin today.
Happy birthday today to Bob Perkins, celebrating 63 years from Cross Lake, I believe the father of our very own Chelsea Perkins. Bob, hope you have a great day today.
And birthday, Gene Anderson is 67 today. And that's a prime day. That's a prime birthday. Happy 67th in Cohasset. And finally, Greg Arntz is celebrating his 70th birthday today in Britt.
Here's a song for them and for you as well, John. It's Dragonfly by Samantha Crane.
Just like that. Yeah. Bang.
Dragonfly by Samantha Crane.
Dragonflies are astonishing. The song was good, but dragonflies themselves, oh my word.
I'll take
that. Colorful, absolutely adept. I didn't mention it, but yesterday I was out watching dragonflies fly around in a meadow, and one of the big green darners, there was a little fluff of dandelion seed just floating by, just wafting along on the wind. And the dragonfly saw it and phew, I mean, he saw it from like 30 feet away and he was over there, went right up to it and then was like, oh, not edible, gone. And if it had been edible, it would have been eaten because dragonflies are like the number one predator on Earth. 95% of the things they chase end up being part of their diet.
Hmm.
They do not miss.
Wow. We heard from a lot of folks texting in this morning. You can as well. The number is 218-326-1234. Michael and Karen north of Nashwalk said that their last sighting of any hummingbird at our feeder was Thursday. We have about 15 goldfinches at our feeders this morning.
Mm.
As for the books I read when I was young, Jack London's White Fang and Call of the Wild, Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan series, Fantasy Stories, and H.G. Wells.
Call of the Wild.
Yeah.
I can still remember one of the scenes in there where the dog and the guy has got a gun and has got the gun in the dog's mouth. And one of the comments from one of the spectators to the scene was, don't break none of them teeth. Things stay with you.
They
Those
do.
Those stories are good.
Yeah. We hear from Julie from Cook. She says, good morning. We just had a male hummingbird stop by our feeder.
Stop it. Cook. Well, I hold out hope. Maybe it'll come to my feeder too. This is definitely the time of the year when the males head south and they do so without the accompaniment of females and juveniles. This time of year, I guess, maybe Julie, that one just was like north of you in Canada and just got the message to start heading south.
We heard from Maureen. She has a question for you, John. She said, is it possible to encourage dragonflies to my yard? We have a plethora of mosquitoes.
Well, that's a good start. Do you have water nearby? If you have mosquitoes, you should have dragonflies. I mean, they just seem to follow. I guess now somebody was telling me you can actually buy a dragonfly on a little wire or you can hook it like to your shoulder or to your hat. And this thing sort of just is a mock of a dragonfly, but it's enough sometimes to keep mosquitoes away. They recognize their enemy and don't want to be part of lunch. I don't know. I don't know why you wouldn't have dragonflies. I find dragonflies just about everywhere I go. I don't have to look very hard. Swamps, lake shores, back in the woods where I live, out in the fields. It's different dragonflies in each location, but there are, it seems like, always dragonflies around somewhere. And the little sympetrums, the little meadowhawks, will hang around until I've got actual dates of meadowhawks in November. But that's the extent. That's the extreme. But yeah, I don't know what to tell you if you haven't got dragonflies. I don't know. Keep breeding mosquitoes. They'll come.
We got an extra observation coming in from Jody from Duluth saying, this morning, what we used to call rogue birds, grackles, red-winged blackbirds, cowbirds, etc., are squawking and eating up the black oil seed. Autumn is headed here.
Wow.
Yeah.
They have left my general location. That brings up another thing that, thank you, Jody, but robins. You know, you were seeing robins all over the place a couple of weeks ago or a month ago. There were robins everywhere you turned. Every yard had a pair of robins and probably some offspring. And lately, that's not the case. And the reason for that isn't that the robins have left the area. They have gathered into flocks. And I ran into a flock of them yesterday, and they were numerous and feeding. So there were a lot of them. But around my yard, I didn't see any, and I haven't seen any in several days. So it's not that they've left. It's just that they're not these independent little family groups. They're gathering into bigger flocks, and those flocks are kind of here and there. And if you happen to be where the flocks are, you're going to be seeing a lot of robins. And if you are where the flocks are not, you will think, oh, the robins have left the area. Well, they haven't left the area. They've simply gathered with a bunch of their friends and are maybe just around the corner.
We heard from Lisa as we were asking our question of the week, which was about reading as a kid. What were your favorite books to read? Lisa said that her third and fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Mattson, would read to the class every day after lunchtime recess. Usually it was just for 15 minutes, but sometimes she would look at the clock and check the number of pages left in the chapter and read on.
Oh.
We all loved her.
Yeah, I had teachers that read to us after lunch. Yeah. That was just the best.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And we just heard from Dave Harrington. He said the wild rice season has opened. It opened on August 15th. There were a few places ready for harvest then and more places every day. It is a really nice crop. Our newsroom has been reporting on it, and we're actually going to hear a little bit right now from Megan Buffington.
Wild rice season technically opened over a week ago, but harvesting is still a ways out. Wet weather has created unique conditions this year. Megan Buffington has more.
Jordan Williams wouldn't go so far as to call this year a bumper crop, but he will say the rice is looking really, really nice.
Really thick, tall rice. If you know of any other place that, you know, typically has wild rice, it's probably going to have just a little bit more this year.
Williams is a wildlife biologist for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Department of Natural Resources. The rice is looking much better than it has in recent years, when drought has limited harvests, and low water meant you couldn't reach the stands that did do well. That's one advantage of all the rain this summer.
This year is something that I haven't really noticed before, ever, in my experience, where we've had enough water to get just about anywhere you need to, and then you still have just a really, really thick rice bed.
The Minnesota DNR's Wild Rice Outlook promises similar success for many ricers, though high water and summer storms did impact some stands. The DNR reminds ricers that it's illegal to harvest green rice. He has a couple more reminders.
Make sure, you know, you come with prepared with all your safety equipment, life jackets, and cell phone. Make sure people know where you're at. Making sure that, you know, you're going out there and harvesting in a respectful way.
Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
Thanks to Megan for that. And thanks, Dave. Good to hear from you today about the wild rice season. If you like to report, let us know.
Yeah, thank you both. Well, fill me in. I'm not a wild rice harvester. I did in the past, but I haven't done it in several years. And I do enjoy the crop, though. Support for this program comes from Sanford Health, with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org. And we receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine. Since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors, with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at coleraine.com. Bank.com, member FDIC.